Welcome to Money for the Rest of Us. This is a personal finance show on money, how it works, how to invest it, and how to live without worrying about it. I'm your host, David Stein. Today is episode 472. It's titled, Is the Economy as Bad as People Think? In the U.S., the unemployment rate has been under 4% for 2 years. That's the best stretch of unemployment since the 1950s. The latest inflation numbers, the U.S. Consumer Price Index, it increased only 3.2% for the year ending February 2024. That's down substantially from 2023 and 2022. Real wages for U.S. workers are higher now than they were prior to the pandemic. In other words, U.S. workers, after adjusting for inflation, are making more money than they were 4 years ago. Yet surveys of U.S. consumer sentiment show not only did consumer sentiment hit its lowest level ever in mid-2022, but the level of consumer sentiment is still well below what it was prior to the pandemic. Why is there this disconnect between economic progress and how we feel about the economy? That's what we'll explore in today's episode, but first we're going to recognize that, yeah, the economy is doing better in aggregate, but it's always doing worse for somebody. Individuals who have lost their jobs, individuals who can't afford to pay rent. I was speaking with a friend yesterday that lives in Phoenix and has had to downgrade their living situation because rents have shot up so high there and in many other places around the country. First, let's take a look at how consumer sentiment is measured. One of the longest running surveys of consumers is the University of Michigan survey. It started in 1946, and they do an index of consumer sentiment, and it's derived from five core questions. They ask consumers about their personal financial situation today compared to a year prior. They ask consumers about their expectation for their personal financial situation a year from now. They ask about overall economic conditions and to rate the current economy. They ask consumers about their short-term economic outlook and for their long-term economic outlook for the next 5 years. 500 consumers are sampled each month. The way that the surveys work is the base index level is 100. That's back in 1966. And if we look at the latest, these are preliminary results from March 2024. They were just released this morning. And it shows that the index of consumer sentiment at 76.5, so down slightly from February, but still 25% below what it was prior to the pandemic. Now, there's been a big increase in consumer sentiment. It's up 29% from what it was back in November 2023, and that's the biggest two-month increase since 1991. So there has been some improvement, but consumers still are cautious and dispirited regarding the U.S. economy. That's for the overall index of consumer sentiment. If we look at their current financial situation versus a year ago, there's a 15 percentage points gap in terms of those that feel worse about their situation now versus a year ago compared to those that feel that they're better off. More feel worse than feel better off. And then if they're asked, what is causing that economic angst? Why consumers feel worse off? Why they have a negative outlook on the U.S. economy? It comes down to higher prices. Over 40% give higher prices, inflation, price increases, as the reason they feel worse about their personal finances. What's amazing about that is if we look at economic data, looking at the growth in real earnings since before the pandemic, so going back to third quarter 2019, and this data goes through the third quarter 2023, median real wages, so after backing out inflation, are up 1.7%. For lower income workers, they're up 3.2%. In other words, earnings are growing faster than inflation, and yet consumers still aren't feeling very sanguine about the economy. Of course, whether your earnings are outpacing inflation depends on what you buy, because we each have a personal inflation rate. One statistic I saw is U.S. consumers are now spending 11.4% of their disposable personal income on food for the first time since 1991. And that's because food prices have increased more than the prices of other areas. Before we continue, let me share a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. The way that consumer prices are measured, or the increase in consumer prices, inflation, there's a basket of goods and services that make up a reference basket, and there are hundreds of goods and services that make up the consumer price index. And some are seeing prices go up higher than others, and so their weights change. And so we've seen, comparing 2023 compared to prior to the pandemic in 2019, that transportation cost and food and beverages have increased, make up a greater weight of spending now because of the inflation levels of those goods and services. Over the past year, consumer price inflation in the U.S. has increased 3.2%, but it's up 18% over the past 3 years. Gasoline is up 38%. That's one reason transportation cost, which includes gasoline and vehicles. That's why it makes up a higher percent of the average consumer's basket of goods and services that they purchase. Rent on primary residences is up 20%. Food, both eating out and bringing it home, is up 21% over the past 3 years. New and used vehicles, up 19% over the past 3 years. When you see these type of price increases, you notice it. We have what are known as reference prices. So in our minds, we think, well, this is what it cost. And if we've had a lengthy period of fairly stable prices, small increases leading up to the pandemic, and then suddenly we're faced with 20% plus increases. And if it's a certain good that we have a reference price for, so for example, LaPrel and I are traveling in California visiting some family, and LaPrel needed some medicine that showed up at our house in Tucson a day after we left. And so we asked our daughter to overnight us this small package. The UPS store wanted $168 to overnight it. Now, my reference price for overnighting packages is closer to $30 because we used to send out reports to our clients. When I was an investment advisor, these are the performance reports for endowments and foundations, and we package them up. And in my mind, I had locked into about a $30 price. Now, obviously, they've gone up higher than that, but $168 is so far out of our mental accounting for packages. There's been increases in other areas. If you look at eggs, dozen of eggs, 65% higher today than it was in February 2020. This is data from Nielsen IQ. Cooking oil is up 54%. Dog food, 56% higher. And that's frustrating to people because they're seeing these price increases in areas where they have a mental picture of what the price should be. And it makes people angry. I saw one article, it referenced an individual named Mary Kay Owen, who started listening to company earnings calls to understand why are prices for staples going up, such as milk, up 20% since February 2020. She says, it's unfair and it's not sustainable and nobody will explain it. She's a 65-year-old substitute teacher in Pennsylvania and she's traded down. So she's buying a cheaper brand of dog food and not having some of the treats that she used to have, at least as frequently. Another individual, Tyler Crawford, 31, has a reference price for going out to eat at Chipotle, getting a classic chicken bowl with chips, guacamole, and a drink. He recently paid $20. His reference price was $8. Stuart Dryden typically bought goods from Kraft or Heinz and looked at Kraft single cheese slices, $7.69 for 24-pack, compared to $2.99 for the store label. So you're not only seeing higher prices, reference prices, but the gap between name brand consumer items and private label or store items has increased. What causes that big price difference? Well, a big driver of the cost between a name brand consumer good like Kraft cheese and a store-bought brand is Kraft Heinz announced a 25% increase in what they spent on advertising. In the third quarter, they spent $750 million on marketing costs, including ads, of their $6.6 billion in revenue. Much of the difference is marketing costs related to convincing us that the name brand goods taste better or are better. We've had a severe bout of inflation in the U.S. and around the world, 19% increase since prior to the pandemic. The causes of it we've discussed, but let's review them. There was massive supply disruptions due to the pandemic in terms of shipping, in terms of workers being able to get to work to produce goods and services. We've had an energy price shock with Russia's invasion of Ukraine. So there have been supply disruptions, but there's also been shifting demand due to the pandemic. During the first few years of the pandemic, households and businesses bought more goods and less services. And then it switched to, as the economy opened up, people could travel more, more was going toward services. There were worker shortages, as many workers retired and haven't returned to the workforce. Those are temporary supply disruptions, shifting demand. Companies can adapt to that. But the biggest driver was the massive amount of new money created. There was a 40% increase in the money supply, with the money supply being cash, checking and savings accounts, retail money market funds. The overall money supply went from $15.3 trillion prior to the pandemic to $22 trillion. And that was the result of the federal government running double-digit budget deficits as a percent of the economy and the Federal Reserve pursuing quantitative easing, purchasing bonds in the marketplace with newly created money. That combination of a federal budget deficit and the central bank effectively monetizing that budget deficit with newly created money led to a huge increase in the money supply. Combined with the capacity constraints, that's why prices are up over 20% since prior to the pandemic. And all that money influences other areas of the economy, such as home prices, leads to higher rents, greater homelessness. I mentioned my friends had to downgrade their living situation to go to a place where they could afford the rent because the rent of their existing place went up over 30%. And then as the central bank has tried to combat this inflation, which, frankly, they were responsible for. At least much of the blame goes to the central bank itself, the Federal Reserve. They've had to raise their policy rate to where it's over 5%. That led to higher long-term rates and higher mortgage rates, which doesn't make first-time home buyers particularly happy. It makes it more difficult to get housing. So yes, the economy, the unemployment rate is under 4%. Inflation is coming down. But the thing about inflation is it doesn't go in reverse. Prices don't fall. Now, they do fall for some areas, and they have. Television sets, for example, are cheaper today than they were. Personal computers are cheaper today. Now, this adjusts for quality improvements. Airline fares are cheaper today than they were prior to 2019. But in aggregate, if the money supply increased 40%, more money flowing through the economy, we're not going to see prices fall. And if our reference price is back 20% lower, then it takes a while to adjust. Before we continue, let me pause and share some words from this week's sponsors. Investing in private market opportunities is challenging. Done right, they offer the potential for exceptional gains. Done wrong, they present much greater risk of loss. The difference between success and failure in private markets comes down to expertise and access. LongAngle is a private community of 2,500 very high net worth investors who leverage their collective expertise and scale to access and underwrite some of the world's best alternative asset investments. After reviewing hundreds of opportunities, LongAngle diligence deal teams greenlight a dozen deals each year. Asset classes range from private equity, search funds, and private credit to secondaries, real estate, and venture. LongAngle is a community of investors, not a wealth manager. Members make their own investment decisions on a deal-by-deal basis. Members are treated as partners on every investment, with full transparency to investment team diligence and underwriting. All members receive equal access to negotiated fee discounts powered by the community's $30 billion in collective assets. Membership is free, but requires an interview with a current community member as well as validation of investable assets. Learn more at longangle.com. That's LONGANGLE.com. Longangle.com. Now, that's one of the main reasons that surveys indicate consumers aren't very happy. They don't feel positive about their financial situation. And it's because of this price shock of inflation. The other, though, is the feeling of uncertainty that came from the pandemic. If you think about that, it's been 4 years, March 2020, when the economy was shut down around the globe. And we worked from home. Many people lost their jobs. Remember going to the grocery store and seeing shelves empty, which I had never seen in my life. In early February 2020, we released an episode about pandemics and pointed out that the largest pandemic in the modern era was the 1918 influenza pandemic. Estimated that 500 million people, or one-third of the world's population, was infected, and 50 million died worldwide, including 675,000 in the U.S. The deaths were so large because there wasn't a vaccine, and there weren't antibiotics, so people just had to isolate and quarantine. And when I published that in early February 2020, I thought and said as much that COVID, coronavirus, unlikely to get that bad. If 4 years later, estimated that 700 million people around the world have gotten COVID. That number is probably higher than that. 7 million people hospitalized in the U.S. 1 million have died. So more people died from COVID in the U.S. than during the flu pandemic of 1918. Now, the flu pandemic in terms of percentages, et cetera, was worse. But for most of us, this is the worst public health crisis we've seen in our lifetimes. And that has an impact on our feeling of uncertainty. A special education teacher in Tennessee said, "I like the feeling of not living on the edge of disaster. I'm at my fullest potential economically right now, but I'm still one doctor's visit away from not being there. And pretty much most people I know are." We've had a health shock and a price shock. And combined, our world view, in many cases, has been substantially altered. We feel less certain, less confident. Our reference prices for what we used to pay have been obliterated because prices have increased 20%. Things will get better. Like anything, we will gradually adapt. Inflation is coming down. We get new reference prices, and we change our behavior. Laprelle and I don't eat out as much as we did, and we are splitting entrees more, sharing meals. And we're not by any means hurting financially, but it's just that psychological feeling like, oh, they're trying, the prices are too high. And the businesses, they're not gouging in most cases. Their costs are going up. They're trying to pass it on. Some have taken advantage, I'm sure, but not most, because they're seeing pushback from consumers. Denny's and Wendy's reported that their guest counts fell. Number of people that visited the restaurant fell in 2023 compared to 2022, particularly those with lower incomes, because the prices are so high. Again, we gradually will adapt. Our software developer that we use is based in Kiev, Ukraine, and we've had discussions of how they've adapted, at least in Kiev, to a war situation. And we're very adaptable as humans. Now, would they like it to be better than it is? Absolutely. They've adapted to the fear and uncertainty of war and still participating. And in some ways, they've mentioned that things seem more normal, but they're not. And that's still showing up in the survey data in the U.S. and other places. Consumers are still disgruntled about the economy. And one of the things I remember from one of my professors in graduate school is people vote with their pocketbooks. As we look toward the presidential election in November, the economy is front and center, as it usually always is every election. And it's why politicians like to take credit when the economy is doing well, even though they have nothing to do with it. In many cases, the governor of Arizona, the state we're resident of, Katie Hobbs, recently had a press conference and said, "We're doing a lot to lower prices for Arizonans," and pointed out that inflation was under the national average now that she's been in office for a year, and inflation rates are much lower. And when journalists and economists ask, what exactly has her administration done to lower prices? What specifically? They didn't have an answer. Her press aide, Christian Slater, said the results speak for themselves. But inflation is a multifaceted problem. The economy is a complex adaptive system driven by narratives, driven by stories. You have all these inputs. And the reality is a state governor who's been in office a year is not going to have an impact on inflation. And in many cases, a U.S. president isn't either, although the entire executive branch, the legislative branch, and the central bank can have an impact on inflation, and they did. Both the Trump and Biden administration, through the COVID relief packages that they passed, combined with the money creation from the Federal Reserve, is the primary impetus for inflation, combined with the other things we've pointed out, the supply disruptions, the workers. And I'm not saying they shouldn't have passed relief. I'm just saying that all of these things come together can lead to inflation shocks, price shocks, and we had one, and a health shock with the pandemic. And it's left us feeling uncertain, less confident. And that's why people feel bad about the economy. And it's going to take many more months, if not years, to adapt and adjust to the way things are. But we can, and we will. Thanks for listening. You may be missing some of the best Money for the Rest of Us content. Our weekly Insider's Guide email newsletter goes beyond what we cover in our podcast episodes and helps elevate your investment journey with information that works best in written and visual formats. With the Insider's Guide, you can discover actionable investing insights provided only to our newsletter subscribers. Unlock greater investing confidence with high-value snippets from our premium products, plus membership and Asset Camp. Access exclusive news, offers, and events you won't hear about anywhere else. Further connect with the Money for the Rest of Us team and community. And when you sign up, we'll also send you our exclusive investing checklist to help you invest with more confidence right away. The Insider's Guide is the best next step to get the most out of your investment journey. If you're not on the list, go to moneyfortherestofus.com and subscribe with the Become a Better Investor sign-up box. Everything I've shared with you in this episode has been for general education. I've not considered your specific risk situation, not provided investment advice. This is simply general education on money, investing, and the economy. Have a great week.